Access number 32386, Mr. Bill Shepherd, Reel 7. Now, what happened? So we've looked at the sort of routine of life in France, you know, after you'd arrived in the Lille area. So what's the next thing you remember about your time there?
Next thing I remember about this time, which was somewhere March, April, May area, what was the Germans started to advance westward.
This was the end of the phony war.
End of the phony war.
Now, yes. Were you caught up in that? There were some air raids just at that time. Do you remember that at all? The Germans launched a series of air raids as they were attacking.
I don't remember this.
Okay, so tell me how you remember the what happened then.
I remember the division picked up its equipment and moved eastward, east of Louvain. And we stopped at a place called the Château du Maraud. Château du Maraud, M-E-R-O-D-E. A brand new chateau in the French style. And we thought that we were well fixed up for accommodation until I inspected the chateau and found that everything in it had been trashed, thoroughly trashed. Everything that was broken. What could be torn up, all torn up.
Now, who'd done that?
It was done before we got there, you see. I reckon it was such a thorough job, it must have been done by the owner. Anyway, we didn't stay there more than a couple of days before we started to retire westward.
Now, at this time, you hadn't come into contact with the Germans. I mean, you...
I hadn't come into contact with the Germans at all.
You were back at the headquarters?
Yes.
So what about the retreat? What do you remember about the retreat?
We moved during the night and holed up during the day. We dug slit trenches and started them during daylight. I can remember passing through, I think it may have been Louvain or Brussels, in the early evening when the city was all lit up with blue lights and the trams were running. The city was functioning quite normally, but we were on our way westward from the following Germans. And we just kept on going.
Were you bombed at all?
No. But one area we stopped and we were at a crossroads where they got a jam up in the crossroads, you know. And overhead, a large wheeling group of German aircraft. But they never dropped a bomb. They didn't have to bother, actually. We were on our way out.
Now, was the retreat in good order, would you say, or was it a bit chaotic?
The movement was quite good, and was obviously some direction in it. But we did come to one area where we observed that our right flank, when we were retreating, was the Belgian army. And we saw them marching eastward, at least not marching eastward, but walking eastward, carrying white flags. That would be about the 1st of June, I would think, 1940.
And how many? A large number of Belgians?
Oh, large number. The main road was filled from hedge to hedge, and this makes the most peculiar noise of shuffling feet, you know, and horse transport. It was a First World War army, actually. Yeah.
Now, were you still in your lorry? How were you traveling?
We still had our transport, oh yes.
And did you know where you were heading for?
we were heading westward, that's all we knew. We had no idea that the situation was so serious, you know. We just kept going. And we kept on going. At one place we came to the main road crossing a big canal on a bridge, and we were halted at this bridge by a young officer who was sweating profusely. And he said, "Who the hell are you?" He said, "This is not supposed to be anybody this side of the canal." I said, "I damn near let you have it," he said. "You had a couple of anti-tank guns there, you see." And so he said, "Get the hell over here, I'm blowing the bridge up once you're through." So we went over and he blew the bridge up. And here we came on the real wreckage of a retreating army in the fields either side of the road, filled with parked vehicles, many of them brand new.
And did you abandon your vehicles at this point? Did you leave your vehicles there? Well,
not yet. We kept our vehicles until we got down to the shore, to a place called Dupan, D-U-P-A-N-N-E.
And what happened when you got to Dupan?
When we got to Dupan, we were told to destroy our vehicles, but not to set them on fire. We were told to get rid of all our personal kit, except what went into a small haversack, and take your wet weaponry, and thus abandon your vehicles. And this place, Dupan, is about halfway between Ostend and Dunkirk.
And so how did you destroy the vehicle? How did you destroy the vehicle or immobilise it?
Ran the engine without all to seize them up and slash the tyres. She was warned not to set them on fire. So anyway, we got onto the beach and we moved along towards Dunkirk for quite a way.
Now, what was it like on the beach? What was happening?
Lots of dead bodies, all drowned, by the way. And the beach was a mess of wet sand and oil sticking to your boots like porridge.
Were there many troops about? I mean,
quite a number. We were obviously the tail end of this retreat, the 3rd Division. And we eventually...
Were you attacked at all at this stage?
No.
So you'd been lucky so far. You'd not seen the German Air Force or...
We saw German aeroplanes.
But they didn't attack you, sorry.
A small hedgehopper type aeroplane, which I believe was called a stork or something. That would appear now and then hopping over the hedges, you know. But we were warned not to shoot at them. Our instructions, if an aircraft came overhead, were that we should stand still and not look upwards. Anyway, we got onto the beach and went along the beach toward Dunkirk, which was on fire, big plumes of smoke at Dunkirk. And we came to a point where somebody had built a jetty out into the sea using 3-ton lorries, nose to tail, and with planks tied along the top of the canopy. And the tide was out, and the Navy was out beyond the tide mark. Quite a few small Navy ships there. And so we decided to stop at this area, which looked quite hopeful, the Navy being within sight, and we'd wait for the tide to come in. And it eventually came in, and I managed to get my small group of 38 technical workshop section into an orderly line leading away from the high tide mark. and we waited there for the tide to come in for the Royal Navy to pick us up. And when the Royal Navy came in far enough, we waded into the sea chest deep, wearing overcoats, your small pack, your boots and your steel helmet, and carrying your weaponry. And we got picked up by the Royal Navy in its lifeboat. And my group was taken to a small gunboat, the name of which I remember, called HMS Mosquito. And HMS Mosquito.
So she came to the jetty? She came to the jetty and picked you up?
No, she did. She just came in as far as she could. With the lifeboats picked her up. There was nobody on the jetty that we could see. It was at the jetty I saw Montgomery. I'll have a look at that, by the way.
So you were on the jetty, or you weren't on the jetty?
We didn't use the jetty.
You just used lifeboats.
We waited for the ship's boats to come in, and we got into them, two boats they had.
So why didn't they use the jetty?
Aye?
Why didn't the boats use the jetty?
The jetty looked damn dangerous to me. If you know, imagine walking along a plank on top of a lorry canopy, you know. Anyway,
So these were just the rowing boats?
The rowing boats were closer anyway. So the Navy took us into the care, the Royal Navy. And
what was it like aboard HMS Mosquito? How crowded?
I'm coming to that.
Sorry.
It was, or had been, a river gunboat on the Yangtze River. So she wasn't very big. But we got on board, we were all soaking wet, and the Navy's first instruction to us was, get your wet clothes off, right? Take this being a large mug full of rum and cocoa. And they take a drink and get out of the bloody way, they said, we're in action, right? Not naval now. So my troops all disappeared in various directions, and the Navy put me under a gun mounting, which turned out to be an anti-aircraft mounting carrying 4.5-inch machine guns, water-cooled guns, you know, on a carriage. And they gave me a mattress to lie on and a dry blanket and took all my wet clothes. And I remember lying down there watching the empty cartridge cases coming down a chute from the guns and falling through a hole in the deck. And that's all I remember because I fell asleep.
So did you actually see the Germans attack, the air attacks? I presume that's what they were firing at.
Eh?
Did you see the air attacks?
No.
You just...
The nearest we saw the enemy off that beach was an observation balloon, which you could see somewhere on the horizon. But there was some light shelling, actually, not much.
I thought you said there was ammunition running down from...
Empty cartridge cases falling down from the chute from the gun.
So what were they firing at?
We were being dive bombed by Stukas.
That's what I mean.
We were being dive bombed by Stukas.
So tell me about that.
Well, I was lying down underneath this aircraft mounting, which was climbing away, and I fell asleep.
Even during the dive bomb attacks? Even during the dive bomb attacks?
Well, yes, I fell asleep. I was tired.
How bad was the tiredness?
How bad was the tired?
How bad was it?
We were really fatigued. We'd been in the sea up to the chest, you see, and all that. We'd been a whole day on the beach.
So what was the trip back like? You were just unconsciously asleep?
Huh?
You were just unconsciously asleep?
I just lay down and watching these empty shells pouring past my nose down the shore. I remember no more. I don't remember falling asleep. I just remember being waked up in Dover.
And what was the reception like when you got to Dover?
In Dover, we were received like conquering heroes. WVS gave us ham sandwiches and cups of tea. The Navy had already given her dry clothes back, by the way, cleaned and pressed. And so we got onto a train, which is holed up on the quayside, and we set off westward and finished up at a place called Tenby in Wales, in a camp of bell tents.
Now, were your units still together?
I still had my section complete. They were all there. See, there was,
and you'd been evacuated. Do you know what day you were evacuated?
4th of June.
4th of June.
Yeah. 4th of June, 1940.
So what happened at Tenby?
At Tenby, we were put on a train and taken along to this tented camp, for we were told to sort ourselves out and we'd be checked up in the morning as to who we were and what equipment we required to make us presentable, because some people had abandoned a lot of the uniform. What else?
So how long were you at Tenby?
We were at Tenby about a couple of days, I think. We were paid out in Tenby on our pay books, and then we were given railway warrants and told to go home for 10 days. Can you imagine it? The Germans on our tails, and we're told to go home for 10 days. Well, what struck me there was that the people in England didn't seem to be aware of what the situation might be. You know, they didn't seem to be aware that we were a retreating army. However, I went off on my 10 days leave and was eventually recalled by a telegram to report to Frome in Somerset, where the division was reassembling.
So you were still with you hadn't changed unit?
Eh?
You were still with your unit then?
I still had my section with me complete. I was very lucky.
So this was still June 1940?
This was still about June the 6th or 7th by then.
I thought you'd had leave as well.
I had my leave, yes.
So it'd be a bit later than the 6th.
That would be a bit later than that, yes.
So what happened at Frome? What was going on there?
At Frome, I was given instructions to go to Woolwich Arsenal with a small convoy of new vehicles, and I was to collect my company's 1098, you know, the company's authorised stores, which I did. I got lost on the way coming back, got lost in the dark.
So you were re-equipped with everything you had
everything
before?
I had a complete set of new accumulated batteries, 125 ampere hour 6 volt batteries, all brand new. And I had to have them all initial charge, so I went to see the chief of the Frome power station. And in those days, Frome power station was on direct current, there wasn't also any current. And he undertook to initially charge all my batteries for me. We had every kind of cooperation from the civilians. So once we got the division up to some sort of fighting strength, we set out back to France, and we got somewhere on the Channel coast. I think it was a place called Cheltenham or something.
Called where?
Cheltenham. It was somewhere on the Channel coast anyway, and we stopped there for one night, and then we were told that France had surrendered and we better go back to Frome, which we did. And when we go back to Frome, I was taken away from the unit and sent off to Llandudno, Wales, where they were busy.
Now, were you leaving the unit or just being detached? Were you actually leaving the unit or on a new posting, or were you going?
I was more or less detached. detach the go to Froome and assist in
not from you
moving the coast gunnery school.
Now where was that at again?
To Landerno. On the Great Orme. That.
So that's the coastal gunnery school?
Yes. And when that was completed, it was bed.
So what were you doing there?
Aye?
What exactly were you doing at the coastal gunnery school?
Supervising the connection of cables to the guns, because the guns had a new form of passing information from the observation post to the guns was done automatically by a needle traversing a dial, and the gunner manhandled his gun so his needle kept pace with the dial. It was a way of passing information, quite primitive, but it worked. And then, having had some of that, I was sent back to Catterick to the School of Signals and given an intensive course on the cabling work required for coast gunnery. And then I was sent up to Edinburgh.
Now, what do you remember about that course? Where was that at Catterick?
It was a 12-hour or anything at Catterick Camp, and it solely dwelt upon laying the cables, how to lay the cables, and how to connect up this new gun control equipment.
Now, what sort of were the cables different from normal telephone wire?
Yes, the cables that used in fortresses were generally seven wires. It was paper insulation, and the cable itself was filled with a resinous oil, so that if the cable got broken, water couldn't penetrate. Anyway, that was over quite briefly, as I say, and I went to Catterick.
Now, that was when, Catterick? Still Norton?
It was still 1940.
And then where from Catterick?
Catterick. I was posted to Edinburgh.
Now what to?
Scottish Command Signal Company. And my job there was to go around the coasts, helping to modernise the coast defences.
Now tell me about that job. So that was 1940. Now tell me about that job. What do you remember about it?
Well, at the end of the First World War, most of the heavy guns which had been around the coast were all cast into the sea and thrown away. It was too costly to move them. So new guns were being put in. And with the new guns came laying cables to carry information from the observation post to the battery observation post. See, the observation post sent to the battery observation post sent a range of bearing off the target, right? This was transmitted on the cable, and in the battery observation post, the gunners moved their needles over the dial and the BOP, and from that they could get the angle of the target at sea level, and with two bearings, you got the distance of the target from the BOP. It's straight geometry, you know.
Now, what do you remember about that? Do you remember any of the places you visited?
Well, I was all around the coast. My headquarters was in... I started off in Midlothian to Kinghorn, Carnoustie, Lossiemouth.
Now, tell me about Kinghorn, because we've done quite a bit of work with people who are at Kinghorn. So what did you do at Kinghorn?
Kinghorn was an old First World War fortress, so the guns had to be put in and fresh cabling. I can't remember much of it.
Are there any you remember, any of the are there any of the coastal defence stations you do remember in more detail?
I remember Lossiemouth.
What happened at Lossiemouth?
New gun positions were put in, reinforced concrete, just off the beach. And the cabling was put in, of course. Then I moved up to Cromarty. And Cromarty, they put guns in on either side of the entrance to Cromarty. It wasn't an estuary, it was just a loch, Cromarty. When new guns went in there and new cabling, and this is where I got most of my experience in handling heavy cable, heavy underwater cables.
Now tell me about that. So how do you do that?
It was laid off a, what do you call these one funnel boats they had? I forgot the name. The name for these boats.
Little hoppers.
Eh?
Little hoppers.
Steam hoppers.
Yeah.
With a flat deck. You laid the cable out in a large figure of eight, or taken off a drum and laid it in a figure of eight on the foredeck, and then you laid it into the sea, either over the tail or over the nose. It was very heavy. It was very hard work.
How big were the, how wide were the, you know, how thick? What were the cables like?
Oh, they were copper conductors inside with vulcanized india rubber. That was covered in canvas. And then that was covered in lead sheathing. And the lead sheathing was covered in armored wire. Quite heavy armored wire.
So a serious, you know, heavy cable.
Very heavy. A drum of cable could weigh 5 tons. It would only be maybe a couple of hundred yards. Not even that.
Any problems?
Oh yes, we quite a lot of problems handling these heavy weights. Anyway, the job was being done with all haste.
This is in 1940 still?
1940, yes.
Anything you remember from that time? Any other things?
Well, I remember one or two things. Once they got the guns going and started, mistakes occurred, such as the guns shooting the funnel off a towing tank when it was towing a target, you know.
How did that happen? Just a mistake?
Maybe, yes. But anyway, they shot the funnel off. And another one was when the driving band came off a shell. See, these coastal gun shells, they were 9-inch guns, quite heavy stuff, you know. The shell was a separate piece from the charge. The charge was cordite in a silk bag, and you could have a half charge, one bag, or a full charge, two bags. And the driving band to give the shell its spin was on the shell. And in one instance, the driving band came off, stuck in the gun, and the shell went off without it, head over tails, and making a hell of a noise, and ruined the gun, of course. I remember that, yeah.